Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q1 FY18 earnings conference call of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touch-tone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jason D'Souza. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Inba. Welcome to Glenmark's Q1 earnings call. Before we begin the call, a review of the operations for the quarter ended June 30th, 2017. For the first quarter ended June 30, 2017, Glenmark's revenue was 23,630 million, recording an increase of 19.99%. India sales for the formulation business in India for the first quarter ended June 30th, 2017, was at 6,164 million, recording a growth of 15.21%. As per IMS MAT June 2017, Glenmark is ranked 14th compared to 16th in MAT June 2016, with a market share of 2.25%, exhibiting value growth of 13.5% vis-à-vis industry growth of 8.2%. Glenmark remains among the top three fastest growing companies in India as per MAT June 2017. US formulations. Glenmark Pharmaceuticals US recorded revenue from the sales of finished dosage formulations was at 10,450 million, recording an increase of 49.68%. In the first quarter of this fiscal year, Glenmark was granted final approval and launched atomoxetine capsules, phenofibrate capsules, olmesodin meroxicam tablets. Glenmark was also granted approval for endomethacin extended-release capsules, labetalol tablets. The company filed two ANDA applications with the US FDA and plans to file another five applications in the forthcoming quarter. Regarding the exclusivity, on December 12, 2016, Glenmark had announced the availability of Ezetimibe, the first and only generic version of Zevia in the United States for the treatment of high cholesterol. The availability of Ezetimibe is the result of a licensing partnership with Bard Pharmaceuticals, an Endo International PLC operating company. Glenmark and its partner Endo were entitled to 180 days of generic drug exclusivity for Ezetimibe. The exclusivity period for the generic version of Zetia ended in early June 2017. Africa, Asia and CIS region. For the first quarter, revenue from Africa, Asia and CIS region was 2,264 million, recording an increase of 16.19%. As per IMS May 2017 data, Glenmark Russia recorded growth of 33.3% in value vis-a-vis its overall market growth of 13.8%. In the dermatology segment, Glenmark Russia grew by 39.6% vis-a-vis segment growth of 14.5%. As per IMS MAT 2017 data, Glenmark Russia ranks 40 in the retail segment. For the first quarter, the Russian subsidiary grew 16% in constant currency. This growth is attributed to the successful sales of Oplumil nail lacquer and the approval of its variation, where the product may be used as a nail varnish, which is an additional advantage. In the respiratory space, as per MAT May 2017 data, Glenmark continues to secure a strong position and ranks fourth among companies present in the expectorant market. During the first quarter, the Asia region recorded secondary sales growth of 6%. Glenmark launched two new products in the region, one in Malaysia and Myanmar. The subsidiaries of Malaysia, Myanmar and Philippines recorded growth of 30%, 21% and 5% respectively. For the first quarter, the Africa subsidiary performed well. The two largest subsidiaries, Kenya and South Africa, recorded good secondary sales growth during the quarter. Europe formulations. Glenmark's Europe operations for the first quarter ended June 30, 2017, was at 1,620 million, recording an increase of 8.09%. For the first quarter FY2018, Glenmark Europe recorded growth of 25% in constant currency. Even though the region recorded good constant currency growth, the overall performance of the European region was hampered year-on-year due to the currency depreciation of the British pound. The Western European region recorded constant currency growth of 18%. During the quarter, the UK subsidiary launched four products and the German and Spain subsidiary launched one product each. The Central Eastern European region also recorded good secondary sales growth for the first quarter. Latin America. Glenmark's revenue from its Latin American and Caribbean operations was at $845 million, recording a decrease of 45.69%. The sharp decline for the Latin American region is an account of sales from the Venezuela subsidiary recorded in the previous corresponding quarter. Excluding Venezuela, the region grew in excess of 15% in constant currency. The Mexico subsidiary recorded strong growth in excess of 60% in constant currency. API revenue from the sales of API to regulated and semi-regulated markets globally was at $2047 million, recording an increase of 4.32%. During the quarter, Glenmark filed one DMF in the US, one in Canada, and one in Europe. Research and development. The company has a pipeline of seven NMEs, which includes two NCEs and five NDEs in various stages of clinical development, focused in therapeutic areas of oncology, respiratory, and dermatology. The company also has three specialty products in clinical development targeting indications in respiratory therapy area. Oncology assets, first, GBR1302. GBR1302, a HER2 CD3 bispecific antibody, is the first clinical candidate based on Glenmark's proprietary BEAT platform. Preclinical study results from redirected lysis assay suggest that GBR1302, when compared to first and second line HER2 targeted monoclonal antibodies, exhibit faster and more complete killing of HER2 plus tumor cells. If confirmed in clinical trials, GBR1302 will constitute an innovative treatment for HER2 positive cancers, including treatment resistant cancers. A phase 1 study is underway to determine the maximum tolerated dose. Dosing escalation is continuing. GBR1342, a CD38 CD3 bispecific antibody, is based on Glenmark's proprietary BEAT platform targeting CD38, a clinically proven target in multiple myeloma. Results from preclinical assays in comparison to daratumab, an FDA-approved monoclonal antibody targeting CD38, suggests that GBR1342 has a potent anti-tumor effect on patient-derived multiple myeloma cell line. GBR1342 is targeting multiple myeloma and other malignancies of hematopoietic origin. Glenmark received clearance from the FDA on an investigational new drug application for GBR1342 in May 2017 and plans to initiate the study in Q2-Q3 of this financial year. GBR3072 is an EGFR CD3 bispecific antibody based on Glenmark's proprietary BEAT platform. It targets the epidermal growth factor, a proven target in several cancers, including squamous cell carcinoma of the head and neck and colorectal cancer. GBR1372 is currently in preclinical development and is also being evaluated as a potential treatment for non-small cell lung cancer and head and neck cancer. GBR8383 is a new type of highly potent OX40R antibody-based agonist in preclinical studies. OX40R is an immuno-oncology target and a member of the TNFR family. It is expressed actively in CD4 and CD38 T cells as well as a number of other lymphoid and non-lymphoid cells. Preclinical data has confirmed a strong agonistic effect on the immuno-oncology target OX40R in comparison to other OX40 and agonists currently in the clinic. Dermatology asset, GBR830, an anti-OX40R monoclonal antibody, was discovered at Glenmark Biological Research Center in Switzerland and is in clinical development in the US. The molecular target of GBR830 is to inhibit pathologically activated T cells and effector memory T cells, which are involved in the variety of autoimmune and chronic inflammatory disorders. The lead indication being evaluated for GBR830 is moderate to severe atopic dermatitis. GBR830 has been investigated in a phase 1 study with healthy volunteers and was safe and well tolerated with no significant safety issues. GBR830 is currently in a phase 2 proof of concept study in the US and Canada in adults suffering from moderate to severe atopic dermatitis. Initial data readout from the phase 2 study is expected in the second half of CY 2017. Glenmark is targeting a BLA filing for 830 in 2022. Evaluation of GBR830 for the treatment of other autoimmune disorders is also underway. GRC39815 is an NCE currently in preclinical studies. It is currently being evaluated as an inhaled compound for the possible treatment of COPD. The preclinical study suggests efficacy in animal models supporting respiratory indications. GSP301, GSP301 is a combination of a steroid and antihistamine administered intranasally for the treatment of seasonal allergic rhinitis in adults and children. Glenmark reported positive results from a phase 3 trial where GSP301 demonstrated statistically significant and clinically meaningful improvements from baseline for the primary endpoint of average morning and evening patient reported reflected total nasal symptom score compared to placebo. The most common adverse event occurred in at least 2% of patients with dyschezia. Glenmark recently received confirmation from the FDA that the data from this phase 3 trial is sufficient and no further studies are needed to support a new drug application filing for GSP301. Glenmark plans to submit a 505(b)(2) NDA in early CY 2018. GSP304, a long-acting muscarinic antagonist for the administration by nebulization for long-term once-daily maintenance treatment of bronchospasm associated with COPD. Glenmark has initiated a phase 2 study for patients with mild to moderate COPD as established by the Global Initiative for COPD Disease. GBR310 is a biosimilar candidate being developed for the treatment of asthma and chronic idiopathic urticaria. Glenmark has initiated a phase 1 study which will assess the pharmacokinetics of GBR310 in comparison to the reference product. GBR310 has the potential to be among the first biosimilar candidates to be submitted for approval for respiratory or allergic diseases in the U.S. The pain acid, GRC27862, is a potent, selective, and orally bioavailable inhibitor of MPGS1, a novel therapeutic target in pain segment, which is upregulated under inflammatory conditions. A phase 1 single ascending dose and multiple ascending dose have been completed in the UK with no safety concerns. It is currently in phase 2 development. The most common AEs for patients receiving single doses were headaches and dizziness. Non-core assets, which include 17536, 900 and 500, these three molecules and 27864 are candidates for out-licensing. Just coming to the notes on the financials that we would like to read out. For the first quarter of this financial year, net debt as on June 30, 2017 was 3362 crores as compared to 3667 crores as on March 31, 2017, a reduction of 305 crores. Gross debt as on June 30, 2017 was 4389 crores as against 4723 crores as on March 31, 2017. The R&D expenditure for the quarter was 255 crores, which was 11% to net sales. Asset additions for the first quarter was 195 crores, of which tangible additions was INR 143 crores. Cash tax for the first quarter was 110 crores. Forex gain for the first quarter was 7 crores. Inventory as on June 30th, 2017 was 2080 crores, receivables was 2510 crores, and payables was 2025 crores. In the second quarter of this financial year, we expect net debt to remain at the March 17 level. This is on account of the increased R&D spend in the second quarter, which will be at least 90 to 100 crores more than Q1. Thus, R&D expenditure for the first half will be at least 13% of sales. The R&D is expected to be lower in the second half of the financial year, and we estimate R&D as percentage to sales to come down to 11% for the year. The Q2 increase will be driven by the fact that we have completed the Phase 2 POC for GBR830 and would also be completing the Phase 2 trials for GSP304. Further, we have stepped our efforts to file the NDA for GSP301 in this FY, as we have been informed that there are no pending queries and no additional Phase 3 trials needed to be done before submission of the NDA to the US FDA. For the full year, we remain committed to reduce debt on a constant currency by at least 300 crores, excluding out-licensing income. Thus, at the end of the financial year, we expect net debt at constant currency to be in the range of 3350 crores to 3400 crores as compared to 3667 crores as on March 31st, 2017. R&D as a percentage to sales for the full year is expected to be in the range of 11% to net sales. Before we open the floor for question and answers, I would like to introduce the management at Glenmark. We have with us Glenn Saldana, Chairman and Managing Director, Glenmark Pharmaceuticals. We have with us Robert Matzik, President, North America and API Business. P. Ganesh, CFO, Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. With this, Inba, we can open the floor for question and answer.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Our first question is from the line of Prakash Agarwal of Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on good set of numbers. So first question on the U.S. Run rate, which has improved Q&Q. Just trying to understand, in terms of ZTR, were we able to, you know, come to a number that we are earlier guided of $170-$180 million? And secondly, would it be fair to assume that with key approvals like Stattera and all coming, there would have been improvement Q&Q in the base business?
Absolutely, Prakash. So I think, clearly Zetia, we ended up in that range that we guided towards, which is $170 to $180 million. As far as Stattera, we were able to get some very good market share, and that's helped help the Q1 quarter. I don't know, Bob, if you want to add something.
No, I think that's correct. I think atomoxetine was a good launch for us, and this quarter we'll hopefully have three or four good launches.
Right. So taking this forward, I mean, how do we expect the remaining 9 months, assuming, you know, obviously this ZTA upside will start or already would have started coming down? And we have talked about, at best or equal to, you know, the last year U.S. sales. So we expect more big approvals coming through?
So I think, our base for Q2 will be around somewhere in the 125 million range, right? And from there on, we will, we are expecting three or four very good approvals yet this quarter, as Bob mentioned. So that will start reflecting mainly in Q3 and Q4. So I think, we're still on track to making sure that the U.S. business is flat or grows marginally YOY.
Perfect. And secondly, given the R&D ramp-up that's happening, we have earlier alluded on at least one out-licensing deal happening. So what is our sense there? I mean, are we on track at least one out-licensing deal? And if that is on track, do we not see more net debt reduction?
So on the out-licensing side, we currently have four molecules that are actively being positioned for out-licensing, and we have active discussions with several companies. So the first one is GBR 830, we have about seven or eight companies that are interested in the product, assuming we get a positive phase two data, and the data is expected within a week's time. So assuming that's positive, right, that could be a pretty substantial deal for the company. The other one is we have GSP301, which is the product which just completed phase three, where there's an OTC component to it. So we have active discussions to partner the OTC piece. And then we've got GBR 1342, which is the oncology candidate which has just entered the clinics. And we have one more product which is the Xolair biosimilar, where we are likely to bring in a partner at some point. So I think these are the four active discussions we have, and we feel pretty good that at least one of these will close before the end of this year.
Lovely, great. And lastly, on LATAM, that is one piece which is still declining, given the base of Venezuela. Now, when do we start seeing the growth coming from that market?
So I think LATAM, you know, will start growing from third quarter onwards because then the Venezuela effect goes off, right? So from Q3 onwards, it will start growing. But the, you know, all the other businesses continue to perform quite well. The other thing about LATAM is, you know, we are at a point where, you know, it's EBITDA positive, cash positive for us as a region this year. So we're not actively investing capital in LATAM.
Perfect. Great. Thanks. All the best.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Neha Manpuria from JB Morgan. Please go ahead.
So thanks for taking my question. First question, Jason, you mentioned that the second quarter end net debt would be at March 17 levels because of higher R&D spend. Is that correct? Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, that's correct.
But I would have assumed that, you know, the last bit of the Zetia, you know, payment coming through would be enough to, you know, finance incremental R&D because, you know, our base business seems to be improving. So shouldn't cash flow generation improve?
The Zetia cash has already come in, which we have already used to reduce debt. So there is no Zetia cash balance coming in the second quarter.
Okay, got it. And second, on the India business, you know, the growth number looks pretty strong given the destocking seen in the channel. What did we do differently versus our peers to have shown such a strong growth number?
So I think on India, you know, if you look at Q4, you know, was a weak quarter for the company, right? And IMS has consistently been reporting us as among the fastest growing companies in India. IMS MAT growth has consistently been close to 15-odd%. April and May were very strong months for the company. And, you know, we were also able to incentivize the channels, right, because we knew GST was coming up to actually hold extra inventory, right, on account of... So June second half was tough, but I think, you know, we did well in April and May, and that's why we're seeing this 15% growth number. I mean, India for us going forward also will continue to be a very strong market. So even in Q2, we anticipate we'll be at about 10 to 15% in growth. And on a full year basis, you know, between, I would say, closer to 15% growth for the overall business. So the business continues to do very well, and we continue to be among the fastest growing companies in India.
Okay, so is it fair to say that there is some amount of that incentive impact in our gross margins, even though we didn't see a sales, a large sales impact? I mean, was it very substantial, the incentives in the quarter?
Whatever incentivization happens is already built into the numbers.
Okay, got it. Good. And my last question on Latin America. I mean, I understand on the year-on-year there is, you know, impact of Venezuela, but even if I look on a quarter-on-quarter basis, I would have assumed the March quarter is the new base. Is there some seasonality, tender, etc., which leads to this wide fluctuation quarter-on-quarter?
So in Latin America, Nia, it's best to look at YOY. So there is a seasonality and a tender impact which was there in Q4. So in Latin America, we would say that it's best to look on YOY. And as I said, that, and as Glenn said, in the second quarter also, there is Venezuela in the base. So in the third quarter, you will see the Latin American region actually growing in terms of top line.
Okay, got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal of IDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Glenn, on GSP 301, can you just help us understand more in terms of how do you see this thing going forward now in terms of filings and launches and the potential for the product?
Sure. So 301, as you know, we got positive phase 3 data, right, on 301. Subsequently, we had some interaction with the FDA, to get some guidance on a pre-NDA meeting, and I think the guidance was extremely positive. So we are all set now to file our NDA this year based on what FDA has guided us. And next year we will launch this product on the market. So I think you know, there are multiple options for us on 301. I mean, one is we launch it as an RX, you know, with either a contract sales force or finding a partner. And then, you know, eventually this product will go OTC. So, you know, there's a lot of interest from some of the OTC major players to try and in-license this product earlier on, right? So they can influence the strategy on the RX side to ensure that the product is successful when it becomes OTC. If you look at the category, there are some very large products. So the OTC, you've got products like Flonase of GSK, which is almost 400 million. You've got Sanofi has a big product there. So there are a number of nasal sprays which are very, very large in terms of the category. And these are plain steroids, right? So here we've got a combination which is superior to just a monosteroid. So I think, you know, the potential is pretty substantial. We think if on the RX side, this product could be $80 to $100 million. But once it goes OTC, it could be something much bigger. And, you know, we will enjoy royalties on the OTC piece as and when we do a deal on the OTC side.
And when are you expected to file this product?
So it'll get filed this year, in Q4 of this year.
Okay. And secondly, on GBR 830, I mean, so you said the data is expected in a week. So what is it in the data, you know, that we should look for, which can, you know, sort of make it a much more positive kind of licensing, I mean, which increases the probability of licensing for the product?
So GBR 830 is really one of the transformational products out there today, right? Because it's an OX40 antagonist, and currently nobody else has an OX40 antagonist in clinical development. So it's like, it was like finding a needle in a haystack for us, right, as far as this goes. What this means, so it's basically a product for, it's an immunology product, right? So it'll have applications across not just atopic dermatitis, which is the core phase two, but it could also work in other indications like SLE, lupus, graft versus host, rheumatoid arthritis. So it's a very, very big product, and you know, biologics typically, especially immunology biologics, they work all over the place. You know, talking specifically of atopic dermatitis, the lead product there is dupilumab, which has just got launched by Sanofi, which is doing exceedingly well, and it's a huge product, Dupaxin, right? Already in a very short time, and that's a biologic also. So I think, you know, positive data for 830 could really be transformational for both Glenmark as well as, you know, because it'll be a completely novel immunology product which could have broad applications beyond even atopic dermatitis. So we are really looking forward to the data, and you know, in a week's time we'll know, you know, where we stand. There's already a lot of interest from a licensing perspective. We already have about 6-8 companies who are currently chasing us for the data as and when it comes out. So it should be a pretty exciting opportunity.
Thanks. And so lastly, on our U.S. business, you talked about a base about $125 million for Q2. I mean, is this something that we were close to even in Q1, or are we talking about a major ramp-up coming through in Q2 over Q1?
I mean, obviously, there is some ramp-up between Q1 and Q2, but it's not that significant. It's just based on the approvals that we've got in Q1 and that are still coming through. I mean, that came towards the end of the quarter, which will impact Q2, right? And then we just got desonide, and we got a couple of other approvals. So I think all that is adding up.
Okay, thank you. Best luck.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Saion Mukherjee from Nomura Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Glenn, just further on GBR 830, you know, in terms of the data, I mean, is it the efficacy data that we would be looking at here? Or I'm just wondering, are there any safety concerns, because it's a very novel pathway, even
so,
compared to dupilumab? I mean, can you throw some light? Is there any safety concern that we need to be aware of here?
So that's the amazing part about this molecule. There's absolutely no safety signals at all. So it's completely clean from a safety perspective, which makes it really exciting. The data that we'll get is basically the efficacy data in atopic dermatitis. It's a signal search study, so it will basically, it will tell us, if you look at patient by patient, what the improvement in the specific symptoms are. So you have something called EASI 50, EASI 75, and SCORADS, and various scoring mechanisms, right, which basically tell you whether the drug is working and how effective it is. So I think that's what we'll get out of the study. And I think basis that, the next step for us is to embark on a phase 2B study, right, which will be a powered study and could be a pivotal study also. So I think, all in all, if that turns out, obviously we are planning for the phase 2B, but at the end of the day, once we get a partner, the partner will be actively involved in the phase 2B development also.
So most likely, if the data is right, and since you mentioned, there are companies looking at it, so in most likely, if the data is right, it would be out licensed.
Yeah, absolutely. We should get a partner on this. We feel pretty good about it, assuming we get positive data.
And given the novelty of the product, what kind of upfront, I'm just wondering what kind of licensing structure would be similar to what we had in the past, or it would be meaningfully different?
All we can say is this is transformational, right? So, we are hoping we'll do better than what we've ever done before. So if the data looks good.
Okay. And on the U.S. market, Glenn, can you throw some light on how should we think about the ramp up? You mentioned some interesting launches. If you can give some more color on that.
So I think from a launch perspective, we have three or four derm products coming up. We have another three products where, we are probably the second generic. And all these are, they're about $80 million in that range, right? And the derm products are much bigger, of course. The derm products, the three or four derm products we have are all in the $150 to $300 million range. So I think we have a strong pipeline coming up for the U.S. I think as and when the approvals come through, it should look pretty good.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Kumar Saurabh from Motilal Oswal Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Glenn, in second quarter and third quarter particularly, given the fact that R&D costs will go up and Zetia sales won't be there, how should we look at our margins going forward?
So I think, look, only second quarter is, we think, will be a challenge, right? But you have to look at the business on a full year basis, right? On a full year basis, we are still maintaining that we will grow top line, in today's currency around 8-9% in terms of top line growth. Margins also will be pretty strong, right? Around the 22% marker is what we anticipate on a full year basis, right? Somewhere thereabouts. So I think that's the way to look at it, right? There may be some quarter-to-quarter variations, but on a full year basis, we'll come out pretty strong.
Okay. And for our peers, when we look at domestic business, everyone is expecting second quarter to be very strong because of channel refilling. Given the fact that we have already been, active and given incentives to distributors, is it fair to assume that we will not see that volatility and our,
correct,
our growth will be, more streamlined?
Yeah, so as I said, Q2, you should anticipate we'll be at about 10 to 15% growth in India. Because, you won't see any significant upsurge on account of additional channel filling or anything else.
Okay, but margins in domestic business should be better because we will not have any kind of discounting or incentives.
That's correct.
Fair enough. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Anubhav Agarwal from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. One question. I didn't understand, Jason, the comment that you made at the starting that debt will increase in the second quarter. So you mentioned that R&D will go up by roughly 100 crore versus the quarter one level, right? So in terms of extra spend, we're doing capex and R&D, but we're generating 250, 300 crore, I mean, PAT plus depreciation. Why would that go up so much in the second quarter? What's the extra spend which is going to be there?
So, Anubhav, as Glenn just mentioned, that over the end of the year, we anticipate that definitely debt will reduce. And, you know, we've given the...
No, but Jason, I'm asking only about the second quarter where you made a statement that...
I think, Anubhav, we've given some... we've already given a very clear guidance on... not only on the debt, but also on where that increase is coming from, right? I mean, that's the only guidance we can give, right? I mean, I think it's important, again, to look at the business on a full year basis. You know, we generated 300 crores in first quarter, and by year end also, we will have more than 300 crores of debt reduction on a full year basis. If we do a further out licensing, you will see further debt reduction. That's the only visibility we can give you at this point.
No, I appreciate, Glenn. I'm only asking a clarity that if capex going, something is going to shoot up, right? Other than R&D second quarter, why the debt has to go up? I'm asking that, will it be capex or something? Because otherwise, just talking another incremental 100 crore cannot increase the debt significantly, right?
So, Anubhav, that's right. Expenditure has to go up. I mean, that's the reason that, and you will see it. I mean, you know, the idea clearly is to give visibility, you know, to the street in terms of how the debt will play out quarter on quarter. And that's what we are aiming to do. You know, so clearly expenditure items will shoot up, whether it is capex, whether it is R&D, whether it is employee cost. There are some elements that we have in. But I think the criticality, Anubhav, one has to see is that it's important to see how sales plays out. You know, so we wanted to kind of clearly send that signal much earlier in time. If we get very, very strong U.S. growth, then things could be different. But we just wanted to highlight this aspect, you know, a quarter ahead.
Okay, sure. The second question was on the gross margin side. If I look at the business, I'm not taking fiscal 17. So if we look at the business before Zetia was launched, in fiscal 15, fiscal 16, we were doing an average gross margin of close to 70%. Now, if I just exclude approximately Zetia, assuming a certain high margin, our gross margins have come down to 65-66% range now. I appreciate price erosion has increased, but it's a very substantial drop. Would this be correct assessment? Is the reason only the price erosion in the U.S. for such a sharp drop?
So, Anubhav, in terms of the gross margin, I mean, if you look at it going ahead in the subsequent quarters, you will see it coming back, like, you know, to the 70% level. There is over here the assumption, which we don't want to hazard a guess. I think your assumptions are quite aggressive. You're definitely much better off
yeah.
what you have just said.
I think the GCs will be around 70%, Anubhav, going forward on virtually every quarter.
But then we have reported 69% this quarter, including Zetia.
Go ahead.
So Anubhav, as we just said, you know, going ahead in the quarter, I mean, this quarter you had several impacts that are there, you know. But going ahead in the next quarter, you will see that. You will see the numbers coming back to the 70% level. So this is how we are seeing the business over the next three quarters.
Okay. One last clarity on interest costs. Our debt went down, and despite INR appreciation and reducing debt, interest costs have marginally inched up quarter on quarter.
Yeah, so beyond the cash interest, there's also the options valuation, which is also a function of the share volatility. So you'll always see some amount of volatility on that account.
But can you just help with that number, that if you exclude, it's puzzling, right? I mean, our interest costs have gone up 1 to 3R, where we should have seen a significant drop, right? Almost like currency itself went down by like some good 5-6%, right, sequentially.
Yeah, so just to give you a sense, our cash interest is about 47-48 crore.
Versus what it was in 4Q?
Would be around similar levels.
but why will not come down?
Because again, you are comparing the reduction in debt at the end of the quarter, whereas you pay interest for the average. So
what
bulk
about
of the reduction
the currency impact?
Yeah. Sorry?
No, currency.
What about the currency impact?
Currency impact, Anubhav, if you see, there is no difference in currency in currency movements between Q4 and Q1. So you can clearly see the...
No, average for the quarter is down 6% at least.
No, you look at the, as of the quarter end, you see that there is no currency. And in fact, if you see also, there is a very marginal forex gain that we have made. Otherwise, if there is a huge currency impact, then you would have seen us taking either a forex loss or a forex gain on the P&L.
Anubhav, the primary reason is that the 300 crore reduction in debt happened towards the end of the quarter. That's the primary reason.
Okay, I'm still not convinced with the answer on currency. I'll take it offline with Jason because interest is paid on average for the currency for the quarter. It has nothing to do with the end of the quarter, right? So.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any participant who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Sameer Baisiwala of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Glenn, on 830, just two quick questions. Given the novelty of this compound, why do you want to license it out in phase 2A, right after proof of, would you not rather wait for phase 2B and then, and then license it out? And second is, why do you think the BLA filing date you mentioned in the MDA to be 2022? Should this not be a fair bit earlier?
So, Sameer, on the licensing side, right, obviously, you know, our licensing structure that we're looking at is we want to continue to co-develop this product, okay, particularly for atopic dermatitis. So we're not just giving it away, right? But I think it'll be good to bring in a partner purely to develop other indications, right? Otherwise, the capital investment becomes too large. So we are hoping that a partner will come in and start some other studies on indications like lupus and SLE and, you know, some of the other indications. I mean, that's the way we're looking at it. As far as atopic dermatitis, we are hoping we will co-develop it. So we're not completely giving away control there. From a capital perspective, you know, we are hoping to get a substantial upfront there, right, which will cover the cost of development and over and above that, you know, some surplus. So I think that's the way we're looking at 830, right? As far as BLA filing goes, you know, FY22, it's going to take us that long to, because there are multiple phase threes to be run. There is a long-term safety trial to be run. So when we put all that together, we think FY22 is realistic.
Okay, this is very helpful. And second question is on your inhaler pipeline.
Yeah.
In December, you mentioned that you're working on three product filings, I think, in calendar 18-19. So if you can update us on the progress over there. And second is on your plans for generic seretide rollout in the European market.
Sure. So we are well on course to... you know, meeting our guidance on the inhaler pipeline, right? At least, so we continue to have three products in development. One of them is generic Advair, and two are ICSs that we have in development. So all those will get filed, I would assume, by FY19 or FY20. As far as the Ceylon product goes, for Europe, we are hoping to launch in the first country by the end of this year, so towards Q4 of this year, and then the rest of the markets will come will get rolled out in the following year.
Okay, this is just one final question, if I may.
Sure.
What's your thoughts? What you're seeing in the U.S. market as far as the pricing is concerned, the pricing pressure.
So, Bob, you
want to
just talk about it?
Sure. You said the pricing, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're looking at negative 10 to negative 12% price erosion at this point, just based upon the portfolio evolution.
Okay. Just we should, negative 10 to 12%, you said.
Yeah, exactly.
Bob, I'm just curious because, you know, this pricing erosion has been going on for long, and that's not about Glenmark. I'm just saying for industry-wide, what's the end game over here? I mean, how long can your three consolidated buying groups can continue to pressure? Is it going to be a five-year thing? Is it going to be a two-year thing? How should we think about this pricing pressure?
Well, I think we got to expect ongoing price erosion as a part of our business model. And, you know, clearly we need to get into more complex generics on the generic side, you know, moving forward. But we see price erosion as kind of a long-term theme in this range.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Chandramouli of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. My first question is on some of the tentative approvals you've received in the recent past. Could you provide some color on litigation status on Onglyza, Vesicare, and Pradaxa? That would be helpful.
So, Chandramouli, on these products, they are not, they won't be launched in the immediate 1 or 2 years. It is still some way out.
Great, thanks. And my second question, I understand there are a lot of variables here. Just given the focus on R&D and out-licensing opportunities, could you give us some ballpark numbers on the potential deal size in million dollars that you anticipate to get for GBR 830 or GSP 301?
I don't think we can give any visibility. We don't guide to R&D income.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Any participant who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. Next question is from the line of Deep Master from NM Holdings. Please go ahead.
Hi. Just a question on a particular product. We got an approval for Nebivolol a couple of months ago. Am I correct that the patent expiry is in December 2017?
No, it's not that far off. It's much sooner.
And any visibility on the FTF, whether you have the FTF for this?
We can't give any visibility on it.
Okay. And am I correct to assume the market size is about $1 billion?
Yeah.
Okay. And one question for Jason. On the net debt number, I missed that. So is net debt down by 300 crores from March?
Yeah, that's right.
And expected to go back up by about 300 crores in the next quarter?
Yeah, so we said that by the end of the year, net debt will still be down by at least 300 crores, excluding out licensing income. But in the next quarter, it will inch up.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Surjit Pal from Prabhudas Lilladher. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. I have just one question on cash tax. You said 110 crore, right?
Cash tax, correct.
Yeah, so which is basically 25%. And if you go by the company's history, it is almost double to that. How was that possible? I mean, how did you do that? I mean, could you please explain on that?
Yeah, just to give you a sense, again, the income tax calculation per se is in accordance with Ind AS 34. And in terms of guidance, what we'd like to state is that the effective tax rate guidance for the year stays at 25%. As regards your question on cash tax is concerned, at this point in time, we expect that the full year cash tax should be under 500 crore.
That's a point. I mean, where do you see that this cash tax rate will come down?
Yeah, so again, there are multiple initiatives that we are already working on, and this is something which is work in progress for some time now, and benefits of which should start showing up as we go along, which is where you have seen starting Q4 last year, you are seeing a drop which is coming about as far as cash tax is concerned. So this is an ongoing phenomenon, and we expect that current year we should end at under 500 crore in terms of cash tax.
Let me put the question the other way.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. Mr. Surjit Pal, could you speak a bit louder? We're not able to hear you.
Yeah. Is it fine?
A little better.
Yeah. Let me put this question the other way. See, your basic source of cash tax outflow is mainly your loss-making subsidiaries. So does that mean, is that your some of the key subsidiaries are making profit in this quarter?
No, so it's actually the other way around. The basic source for cash tax is primarily India, US, and some of the other profitable geographies. And the ones which actually contribute to the contribute in terms of losses and therefore contribute in terms of deferred tax are some of the loss-making entities. And on a full year basis, we do expect some of these to turn around, start making profit, which is also giving us a benefit in terms of the overall tax position.
Okay. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Prakash Agarwal of Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity again. Just trying to understand the Renegade and Renvela, that is the Sevelamer portfolio that we have. What is the current status here, especially on the fact that, you know, Aurobindo just launched one product given that they were vertically integrated? So if you could give more color, it would be helpful.
So Prakash, we have no visibility other than, you know, we were among the first filers in both these products. Other than that, we have no visibility. We have nothing outstanding as far as queries from the agency. So whatever queries are there have all been addressed. So we're just, you know, I mean, we're seeing what the next steps are.
What I understand was that there has been API issues on the product. So what you're saying is there is no outstanding CRL or data points pending?
Whatever has been outstanding has been responded already. Right, so it's now with the agency.
So we expecting this in fiscal 19?
Again, we can't guide to it, Prakash. We've been, as you all know, right? I mean, as you know, most companies have been waiting for this approval for a long time, right? But it's always got, I mean, it's delayed, right? So it's very hard to predict when the agency will approve the rest of us.
Understood. And secondly, looking at the products at clinicaltrials.gov, there are two derm products, you know, the Benzaclin and the Voltaren. So where are we in terms of, you know, the final studies done, filed, and looking for approval?
So, I mean... I mean, all these are filed, okay. As far as approval, I can't give you too much visibility. But as we said, right, we have three or four derm products which are likely to get approved, you know, within a quarter or two, right? So we'll see how it plays out.
And this could be one of your key products that you alluded earlier, 10 to 15 launches. This could be among the key ones?
It's possible.
Okay, great. Thanks. All the best.
Thank you. We'll take a last question from the line of Harith Ahmed of Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. On GSP 301, given your plan to Q4 FY18, do you anticipate any IP-related litigation post your filing?
Oh, this is a novel, I mean, we have a lot of IP of our own filed on this product, right? It's our own novel specialty product. So we have patents filed, so we don't anticipate any litigation around it.
Okay. And on some of the other interesting development programs that we have, the partnered ones such as Nuvaring, generic of Nuvaring, and Concerta, are there any updates on the filing plans for these? Are these potentially FY18 or 19 filings?
So whatever we've guided to, right, in our analyst presentation, right, we are on course to achieving that.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. So we have one more question. That's from the line of Monish Dave from Temasek Holdings. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Just two things to check. One, if there's any update on Mupirocin and what's happening in terms of new competition and price erosion. And the second question was regarding your update on guidance earlier. In the last quarter's call, you had updated, you had guided for 12 to 15% revenue growth. Is that guidance still on?
So on Mupirocin, Munish, we have not seen any competition so far. We'll have to see, we'll have to play it every month at a time. So as of now, we've not seen any competition. When we rolled out our guidance, if you see at that time, we had said that, you know, this is on a constant currency basis, and thus, you know, the rupee at that time, you know, was pretty strong. And now if you look at the rupee has appreciated. So at the current rupee levels, we think that we should grow at about anything between 8 to 10%.
Got it. Sorry, Jason, it should be even better than the earlier guidance. You're saying rupee is appreciated. Is that what you're saying?
So, no, earlier, when the rupee was at 67, we had guided to about a 12% growth. Now the rupee is currently hovering at 64 to 65.
Got it. Okay.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was our last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jason D'Souza for closing comments.
Thank you, Inba. Just before we close the call, we'll read out the disclaimer. This call has been organized by Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. The information, statement and analysis made during this call describing the company's objectives, projection and estimates are forward-looking statements and progressive within the meanings of applicable security laws and regulation. The analysis contained herein is based on numerous assumptions. Actual results may vary from those expressed or implied depending upon economic conditions, government policies and other incidental factors. No representation or warranty either expressed or implied is provided in relation to this presentation. This presentation should not be regarded by recipients as a substitute for the exercise of their own judgment. With this, we end Glenmark's Q1 earnings call. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, members of the management. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.